it's just how you define resistance and how you address certain resistance. But I don't know. There's a part of me that thinks writing a song can never be a bad thing.
Most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us.
Nothing's perfect, and there's going to be a price for everything.
What's the point if you're not really feeling it?
Welcome to The Resistance, featuring meaningful conversations.
We live in a condition of a constant murmuring.
Like, that just doesn't happen for anyone.
That explore that very space between who we are and who we say we want to be. I'm your host, Matt Connor.
In our many conversations about The Resistance so far, there's a general direction associated with it on the part of the artist, away from it. It makes sense. I mean, who among us wakes up with a burning desire to face down our fears or confront our anxieties or even feel our most vulnerable? There's a reason the path of least resistance exists. But that's not true of all of us, and as it turns out, I think that's what I love so much about the band Lucero, at least in part. Now, before I spoke with Lucero's frontman, Ben Nichols, for this conversation, there was no way I could have known that he was the kind of person so willing to confront his resistance, and in turn, the band as well. All that I knew was that I loved their distinct brand of Memphis rock and roll, a soulful southern indie rock sound that has stretched and morphed over 12 albums in 25 years. Perhaps NPR described them best when they said that Lucero is the rare kind of band with enough spirit to fill an arena, but with its heart firmly planted in the garage. Now, 100 things can go wrong for a group of guys committed to piling in a van together for hundreds of dates every year over a full quarter century. But Lucero is one of the few who found longevity. And what I didn't realize before speaking with Ben is that beyond the talent and the chemistry, Lucero's healthy relationship with their own resistance is such a big part of the band's sustained success. On this episode, we sat down with Ben to hear about chasing down boot camp experiences in the studio and the different ways that resistance takes shape now compared to the band's early days. We think you're going to love this episode, so stay tuned with our conversation with Ben Nichols of Lucero. Hello and welcome to The Resistance. My name is Matt Connor and I'm your host. Today I'm sitting across, well, at least digitally speaking, with Ben Nichols from Lucero. First of all, just how are you today?
I'm doing pretty good today, actually. Thank you. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Are you in a home studio?
I am. I'm in my basement, which is where I actually do a lot of my writing, most of my writing nowadays. And so, yeah, I've got my own little office kind of down here where I can shut the door and actually get some work done sometimes.
It looks like a properly lived in and cool space that would be inspirational for that kind of, have you had that for a while?
My wife and I have lived here for 6 or 7 years now. And so I never had a basement growing up in Arkansas, but up in here, my wife's from Ohio and everybody's got basements up here in Ohio. And so now I finally have the room I wanted when I was 14 years old. Now I finally have it all to myself. And I've got it decorated kind of like a 14-year-old.
I love it.
So yeah, I've got all the stuff I love kind of around me in my workspace. So yeah, it's comfortable.
Well, good. Yeah, no, it looks great. I obviously want to talk about the newest album, the catalog, the longevity in the industry. But before we get to any of that, we always drop the conversational marble sort of in the same place and see where it rolls. So our source material is from Stephen Pressfield's book, The War of Art. And I just want to lead out with the same quote. I'd love to get your perspective here.
Sure.
Pressfield writes this. He says, "Most of us have two lives, the life we live and the unlived life within us. And between the two stands the resistance." I'm just curious for you, what do you think of that quote? And what does resistance look like for you at this stage?
Man, that quote makes a lot of sense, and it's something that I've dealt with, and I think everyone deals with when they're trying to figure out what they want to do as far as a career and life goals. And so, I don't know, the tricky part for me is the resistance has kind of evolved over time, and the whole, you know, the difference between the life you're living now and the life you want to live. The funny part is, for, you know, the last 20 years, I've been in this band, Lucero. We've been, you know, your kind of standard hard living rock and roll band, always on the road, constant touring, playing lots of shows, late nights, a lot of fun, a whole lot of fun. It was exactly the life I wanted to be living, or at least I thought so.
Sure.
But then after a while, there was something missing. And my personal life was kind of aimless, maybe. I didn't really have a home to go back to ever. You know, I had a house in Memphis, Tennessee, but my parents were in Arkansas. My brothers were in Texas. It was a little disjointed. And so finding the life that I wanted to live, I had to make some, I don't know, I had to kind of recalibrate how I viewed my personal life and how I wanted to approach it. Professionally, you know, Lucero was successful enough to keep us going and enough for me to be happy and feel like I was, accomplishing the goals I wanted to as far as songwriting and performing goes. But there was something missing. And so I had to work through a resistance, not so much in my professional life, although I do that every day trying to write songs. But the bigger one for me, just, you know, in my overall life, was figuring out how to get to this family life that I'm in now and how to have both a family life and a life on the road, a career as a musician and, you know, a career as a father and a husband. And so that's really what I've been working with the most lately over the last 6 years since my wife and I got married. It's kind of a whole new ball game for me and it's great, but it took a while for me to get there. I'm sorry. That was a really long and overly involved answer to the first question.
No, it was great. It was great because it opens up the doors that we want to walk through here. At least I'd like to walk through if you'd rather not, feel free to say, I'd rather not.
No, shoot. I'm pretty open.
You know, I guess that brings up for me wondering if I understand you correctly, if you're gone, I mean, you guys tour relentlessly, especially, you know, like early on and trying to get out there.
Right. Not quite as much these days. But in the early days, we were just, you know, 250 shows a year sometimes.
Jeez.
And just always on the road. But it's what we were, it was what we wanted to do. But yeah, actually, I don't know, easing back on that throttle a little bit opened up the possibility to, yeah, have a more substantial emotional connection with family and stuff.
Sure. Here's what I'm thinking. When I talked to several musicians during the pandemic, right, there was this stark and often unsettling realization of, oh, like this is who I am. And
right.
Like when I can't take my show on the road, this is what home is really like. And the answers often weren't good or weren't encouraging.
Exactly. It can be pressure.
Sure. And so when you're talking about feeling dissatisfaction with, you're like, you know, I felt like I wasn't living the life I wanted to live, at least at home. How do you, I guess I'm wondering, how frustrating was that to maybe feel some dissatisfaction? And yet, how do you attend to it if you're hardly there? You know, how do you attend to something in a way that you want to, when maybe the opportunity to cultivate that isn't there? Or was that strategic? Like, was part of the throttling down is me needing to?
Yeah, was wanting to give that side of my life more attention. For me, the pandemic, it was terrifying. And the fact that pretty much any monetary income that we had was immediately stripped away. We did some online shows and luckily our fans, you know, kept us afloat online, but having to, you know, cancel 100 shows just right off, it's terrifying. So there was that aspect of it. But then once I figured out that, you know, we could do some online stuff and we were going to scrape by, having the time at home, my daughter had just turned 3. She was maybe 2 or 3, 4 at the time through those years. And I ended up relishing that time at home. And I ended up, there was a part of me that missed going on stage and being that persona. But I was fine to take a step back from that persona for a little bit and really just 100% dive into this fatherhood, home life situation that I was in. So for me, I found that I actually ended up right where I wanted to be. And so then coming out of the pandemic was actually kind of the trickier part, getting back on the road and getting back to work. During the pandemic, we did write an album and recorded an album and released an album all during the pandemic, which was a weird experience, you know, doing the record release show online. And no, it didn't sell quite as well as the others. And it was kind of an odd introspective record with some weird synthesizers. Like, you could tell I'd been inside too long. I like the record, but it's a little different for us. And so then, but yeah, the pandemic started to ease up and musicians started to get back to work and back on tour. And that was a little anxiety producing. There was some resistance there to work through. Can I still do this? Will the crowd still be there like they were in the old days? What's expected of me now? And will I be able to live up to it? Those were all kind of anxiety inducing thoughts that I had, you know, getting back to work. But I was able to, we got back in the studio, we recorded this latest record. It's called Should Have Learned By Now, which we've learned some things, but I don't know. I'm not sure if we've learned everything we should. We should have learned more. But yeah, we got back in the studio and recorded this kind of more upbeat rock and roll record. And yeah, started to get back out on the road. And really, I feel like now I've got things, I don't know if balanced is the right word, but I feel like I've got a certain balance today that I didn't have before the pandemic, before I got married. So we'll see. Now the songwriting process is still a whole nother monster to tackle. But as far as performing and having the life I want at home and the life I want on the road, yeah, it's a pretty good balance right at the moment, I guess.
Hey, congrats on that, by the way.
Thank you. I don't mean to sound smug.
No, I think that's a real achievement. Yeah, I think that's a real achievement to celebrate. And I want to talk about the songwriting aspect and creativity and resistance. But I want to go back just real fast, because I think what you're describing, a lot of people can relate to, which is, if the life that I'm living right now is getting me what I have right now, and I don't want to maybe sacrifice or lose that, and yet there's this other part that I'm dying to attend to because I'm feeling that.
It's a yin and a yang kind of a thing, circling each other.
How well do you recall sort of the emotions or the time in the band? Because it's not just you either. You got to go to a group of guys and go, hey, I want to throttle back, but that may mean the livelihood of all of you.
Sure.
Do you recall when that was? And
as far as the band goes, we're all getting older, and you know, and more of the guys have kids now. Not all of us, but more of us do. And I don't know, really, as long as we could keep, you know, making a living, a good living for everybody, we tried not to throttle back so much that we took away from our livelihoods. We just tried to do business in a slightly smarter way, hopefully. Working smarter, not harder, kind of a thing. And so that's really what that was. And so everybody's kind of been on board. And with my guys, I'm lucky. I think they would work as much as I would. They'd do all the work I could bring them. But I think we're all kind of on the same page. And having a band like that is, that's tricky. It's the same guys for since 1998. And so we've had our ups and downs, of course, but we've learned to compromise. And everybody is pretty comfortable kind of in the role that they play. And we've just got it a pretty smoothly, fairly smoothly functioning machine. So yeah, we didn't slow down too much, I guess.
Yeah, I just didn't know how much you remember there or recall the emotions.
No, the emotions, I think it happened gradually enough to where there wasn't necessarily one moment where it's like, all right, we've got to take a step back. That was maybe the pandemic where like, okay, we're not going to play any shows for the next 2 years. And so that moment was, it was just fear. How am I going to support my family, my new family? How am I going to support the guys in the band? But with help from our management and some online folks, everybody had to kind of shift into Zoom meetings and online performances. But we made it through. But otherwise, overall, it was a pretty gradual transition. I think it's kind of just naturally a band getting older doesn't spend quite as much time on the road as, you know, the 22-year-old who just got the van and, you know, hits the road, which we did for a long time. I was thinking about it, listening to the book about resistance and the things that resistance throws up in the face of the artist. I don't know, just whether it's, you know, alcohol and substance abuse or trouble in relationships or just, you know, the feeling of being unworthy, boredom, wanting to just kind of retreat away from the world, all of that stuff. What struck me was when I was listening to the audiobook was that a lot of that stuff is what I write songs about. The resistance itself, in a weird way, is the material that I'm taking and then putting back into these songs that I write. Just for Lucero in particular, that just happens to be, you know, the failed relationships, staying out too late at night and, yeah, drinking too much and feeling bad the next day, or wanting to drink and have a party and have a great time. All this stuff goes in there, and it's funny that some of those things keep you from your work, but I've somehow managed to take those bad things and actually make them the work.
That's really the whole theme of the new album.
It is.
It's like, you know, there's this through line of a man, and I know, like you've said in the past, all, you know, my songs aren't necessarily all autobiographical. Like you feel permission to tell stories that maybe aren't fully your own.
For sure.
But I'm sure there is a part of you in there in each one. And
for better or for worse.
Right. So here's this set of songs where it feels like each song or most of the songs are kind of a, here's where I am as a person, and here's where others are telling me I should be, or where I think I should be, and the feeling of that distance, and then kind of chronicling the emotions around that.
Right. And yeah, this record might be a chronicle of resistance, actually. But it was, yeah, it's always been, songwriting's always been therapeutic for me, I think. And it's, I don't know. Again, listening to the book, I don't know if I'm making art for the right reasons. In the old days, you know, it might have been to impress a girl I was interested in, or a girl I had a crush on, or to just, you know, try to prove to my parents that I was worth something. I don't know. The love he talks about that should be present when you're making art, I don't know if I was always making art out of genuine love or not. I feel like some of it might have been made out of desperation. But either way, it got me through some really long nights.
I mean, don't we all have 100 motives that lead us?
I guess so. And really, probably, you know, if I was talking to Pressfield, he would be like, oh, well, I have a feeling everything I'm saying is probably in perfect agreement with the book. And it's just how you define resistance and how you address certain resistance. But I don't know. There's a part of me that thinks writing a song can never be a bad thing. Even if you're kind of ambiguous about your personal motives when you're writing it, I think maybe the actual act of doing the art might absolve you of some of those lower intentions, possibly. I don't know. I'm making this up as I go.
No, I like it. I like that actually as a working theory.
Yeah, maybe I'll run with that for a little bit. Yeah.
Hey, you mentioned earlier that, you know, hey, look, the guys in the band, we've been together since 98, which can lead to, and there is certainly a Lucero sound, if you will.
Sure.
But there was also like a real stretch there. You guys worked with producer Ted Hutt.
Oh yeah.
You know, there's a few albums there in a row where you were adding members, or like here's horns and here's pedal steel and here's, you know, right?
Yeah, we had 9 pieces for a little bit there.
When we're talking about creativity and resistance, I'm curious about that musical side where somewhere along the lines, you guys really, and you've even referred to this part as like a stretching period, like working with Ted stretched the band. Was that, like, what led to that? Were you wanting to be stretched? Were you bored?
Man, you know, yes. I, to be honest, I probably, the last record we did as just a 4-piece with the original 4 members was Nobody's Darlings. And after that, we'd run ourselves into the ground pretty good, just constantly on the road, not the healthiest of lifestyles, not the healthiest of relationships, if there were any back home. We were in kind of a, and you know, in the career, we were doing okay in small venues, and we weren't worried about folks showing up. We knew we'd have a crowd, a small crowd, maybe not the biggest crowd, but we knew we could make it from town to town and make a living. Our trajectory wasn't necessarily, you know, we weren't, I don't know, the business wasn't booming necessarily. And yeah, I was feeling pretty tired and was thinking about quitting. I was like, all right, we've done what we can do with Lucero. But we happened to meet Rick Steff, who's a brilliant piano player. He'd a little bit older than us. He'd been around Memphis forever, played on a ton of records. And he was like, yeah, I'll come to your band practice. And he sat down, and we'd never played with him before, never practiced before. This was the first one. And he played every song like he'd been playing them for 30 years. He's one of those guys, one of those professional musicians. And that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, if he'll be in the band, there's so much more we can do. Like, I could go this direction. I could go that direction. I can really make these songs sound the way I hear them in my head and really flesh them out. And he brought a new life to the band and re-inspired me. And then, yeah, there was a very productive time for the band. And yeah, we brought in Ted Hutt, who had worked with like Gaslight Anthem. And I think he was an original member in Flogging Molly, actually. But he'd worked with all these folks, and he's a really good producer. He's got a great ear. He could tell that we were kind of in this evolution, and he pushed us to become better musicians. Like, we had Rick. Rick was great. But the rest of us, we had some work to do. We had to be honest with ourselves and say, all right, I need to put a little bit of work into my, you know, whether it's my timing or the tone of my guitar, or I need to focus on my craft a little bit. And he forced us to do that. And so, yeah, with Rick kind of as the inspiration and then Ted as kind of the taskmaster, making 1372 Overton Park, it was one of those rough, tough, it was like boot camp for us. At the same time, you know, we were making a great rock and roll record, which is a fun thing to do, but it was also like boot camp at the same time. And we came out of that whole process as a different band than we were before. And yeah, it took all of us kind of making the effort. And I think we've been making better records ever since then.
You didn't flinch from that boot camp because you went back to that well two more albums.
I wanted it. I wanted it. Yeah, I wanted the boot camp. It was kind of a lack. I think, to kind of use some of the terminology of the book, I think before we met Rick and Ted Hutt, the whole band was kind of giving in to this resistance, actually. It was kind of dogging us down. And we were still making records and playing shows, but it wasn't the right path. It was just going to keep leading down. And so we really had to work through the resistance and work on ourselves and the whole package, the whole craft, to really get kind of a second shot at everything. And yeah, all the guys came through. I wouldn't have been surprised if we would have lost, you know, a band member or two during that process, but we didn't. All the guys, they really showed up. And so, yeah, it made us a stronger band.
Is that your temperament to chase after like getting better in that way? Or was that just the fruit of we kind of reached the end and I knew I needed something?
I think for me, I'm not the most disciplined of artists. And so, yeah, it might have had to have been kind of forced on me, or I forced it on myself. I just, you know, you get to the bottom and you can only go so low before something has to change or just completely break. And we might've been at that point. I don't know. I'm not the most ambitious of artists. I think when I started the band, and Brian Venable, my guitar player, I think he'd agree with me. We just wanted to, you know, play a show at a local, you know, punk rock DIY venue. And that was kind of the goal. And then anything beyond that was just gravy, but it worked pretty well. The six or seven people that were there actually liked us and wanted us to play again. And it kind of naturally grew, but we didn't start, you know, I know we've played with guys, we've had folks open for us and you could see the fire in their eyes that, you know, they're shooting for the top. And that's great. But that was never really our goal. And that shoots us in the foot sometimes. We should have been more ambitious, I think, in the past. And maybe should have put a little more thought into how we're going to get to where we're going. A book like this, The War of Art, it makes you think about that path that you're going to take and the obstacles that you might encounter. We just stubbornly just kind of plowed through everything with no thought whatsoever. And some of it worked, some of it didn't. And luckily we came out the other side. But like I said, we weren't aiming to be, I don't know, the Rolling Stones or the Beatles or the next whoever. We were just kind of, I don't want to say complacent, but we were happy where we were. I'm happy playing these kind of shows. Every now and again, we get a chance to play an arena or a big stadium. And those are, they can be kind of fun, but they're, for some reason, that's a level I've never really wanted to operate at all the time. Like I said, I've got a certain balance now with the family and the career. We ended up kind of right at the right level. There's definitely things we could have done differently in the past. So now we're just trying to not make the same mistakes we've made in the past.
Ben, would love to give you the chance to tell us. I know, you know, the new record came out 6 months ago or so, but like what else is on the horizon for you, like creatively speaking, you know, personally or within the band or?
Well, the band has more touring to do. We always have more touring to do. But during the pandemic, I decided to make a synthesizer record with my stepdaughter, who's actually a really good singer. she just kind of, she was writing songs here and there on the piano. And I was like, oh man, you can really sing. And so I ended up kind of writing a concept album on the synthesizer. And we called it Last Wolf in the Woods. It's just on Bandcamp right now. But it was kind of a project of something I would never really do with Lucero. But it's a kind of music that I like outside of the band. And it was really fun to pursue this completely different style of music, especially with her voice singing the lyrics. And the whole idea behind it was I've always wanted to write and illustrate a graphic novel. That's something I've been putting that off for the last 20 years. So resistance 100% as far as that goes. Part of me was like, well, I'll make this synth record and I'll write the lyrics for it. And once I've written 10 songs with the lyrics, there's got to be enough in there to scrape together a graphic novel. And the funny part is the album kind of tells a story, but then I tried to put it into a longer format, into, you know, a short story or a screenplay type format. And I was like, oh God, there's nothing here. I've got characters. I've got a setting. I kind of have an idea of, but I don't have a real, I've got everything, but I don't have a plot. I don't have an actual story. And it made me realize there's a big difference between writing a 3-minute story in a song and then trying to do something longer format that could be, yeah, possibly a graphic novel or a screenplay. So I'm just now really tackling that. I've got the soundtrack for it, but my next goal, and I've talked about it enough in public now to where I really need to buckle down and do it.
There's some accountability there.
Exactly. The next goal is to really write and draw this graphic novel. But that's, yeah, that the resistance is mean there. I'm really struggling with the resistance because there's always family stuff to do. There's always band stuff to do. There's always something else to do other than sit down and work on this plot for this graphic novel. So yeah, I'm fighting the good fight. I'm trying.
Empty hearts and blackout nights was all I had to show for all of my good times. But when she came around, she changed everything somehow. Without her, nothing's alright. Nothing's alright. But I walk through the door. We
You've been listening to The Resistance. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. And for more information or further episodes, you can find us at listentotheresistance.com. Audio production by Isaac Viney. Theme music by Jake Kirkpatrick. My name is Matt Connor, and I'm your host. Thank you so much for listening.